You're listening to the From MB to Baby Virtual Summit, brought to you by MB, the only tracking app exclusively made for women going through IVF, IUI, and egg freezing cycles. I'm your host, Ravid, the founder of MB, and today we're joined by Dr. Shannon Clark, a double board certified OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine specialist focusing on the care of women with high risk pregnancies. Inspired by her own infertility and egg donor journey, Dr. Clark founded babiesafter35.com to support women trying to conceive later in life. Hi, Shannon. We're so excited to have you here on the From MB to Baby Summit. I'd love for you to introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about your personal connection to infertility.
Hi, thank you for having me. I am Dr. Shannon Clark. I am a double board certified OBGYN and maternal fetal medicine specialist. I am currently a professor of maternal fetal medicine at the University of Texas Medical Branch in Galveston, Texas, where I've been here roughly since 2004 when I started my fellowship in maternal fetal medicine. So my day-to-day for my job purposes, I am in academic medicine. So that means I am a clinician taking care of patients. I am a researcher and also an educator, educating medical students, residents, and fellows. So we have all three responsibilities as a clinician, as a part of academic medicine here at UTMB. With my personal connection with fertility, I spent 15 plus years training to become a maternal fetal medicine specialist. And I had never, been married or anything until I actually met my husband. I was age 38. We had both just turned 38 to within a couple of months of each other. And we met. Neither one of us had ever been married. I guess I wouldn't say it was love at first sight, but close to it. Once we kind of figured out that we were each other's person, we talked about the having babies thing because I was 38 and I'm an OBGYN. So I knew that I was on somewhat of a timeline. So we both wanted kids. So we married, I turned 39. We married shortly thereafter. And then after that, we decided to try right away. And we did become pregnant right after getting married. And that resulted in a chemical pregnancy loss. And then a few months after that, I found out I had melanoma. So that delayed us for a little while. Once that was cleared up, that put us to, I was 40 in a few months after that was all cleared up. And then I panicked a bit. We went to a friend of mine who is a reproductive endocrinology and infertility specialist, and he educated us both. I have to admit that even though I am an OBGYN, I don't know if I wasn't aware or maybe just in a little bit of denial of both. Seeing the stats about conception, spontaneous conception after age 40 kind of freaked me out a little bit. And because we were on a timeline and wanted to try to get pregnant as quickly as possible, we did opt to go straight to IVF. And we did. And unfortunately, after 5 cycles of IVF with me, we ended up with having 16 embryos throughout the 5 cycles that were able to be genetically tested. Of course, genetically testing the embryos was necessary due to my age. And those 5 cycles took close to 2 years, but only one of those 16 embryos was genetically normal, which is obviously a shock to me. I was not expecting that. The one genetically normal embryo we got was on the 3rd cycle of IVF. We did transfer that embryo and it did not take. So that was a failed embryo transfer. We did 2 more after that for a total of 5. And once we, did the 5, I knew I was done. And so quickly made the decision to go to egg donor or donor egg. It wasn't a very difficult decision for us to do that because we knew we wanted to be parents. I was now approaching, I was over 42. We did find an egg donor and were able to get 5 embryos from her. And because of her age, they were not genetically tested, which, at a younger age, it's not always required or recommended that especially with donor egg, that the embryos are tested. And we transferred 2 and that failed. That was probably out of my whole journey, the most difficult loss because I had put so much hope You know, after having gone through five cycles of IVF myself and failed, I guess a part of my brain just knew donor egg was the cure. But it wasn't. That first cycle did, first transfer did fail. We took about a 5 to 6 month break, actually, and we had actually considered not even trying again, even though we had three embryos left. But we did change our mind. We transferred two more, and that's how I got pregnant with my twins. And I delivered them at 31 weeks in September 26th of 2016, and they just turned 4 years old.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Now that's quite a journey that you've been on. Choosing, you said that it wasn't a difficult decision for you with the donor eggs. Tell me a little bit about the process of how you guys came to that decision.
Well, I mean, obviously it was suggested by my doctor, my fertility specialist. You know, the best shot you have of getting pregnant, if that's what you guys want to do, is with donor egg. So we didn't take a whole lot of time deciding that that's what the next step we would do. But it was a little bit difficult for me to pick a donor egg because, you know, there's donor egg banks, and we were deciding to go with the fresh donor egg cycle, where we would have a young lady who would donate her eggs, and all of those eggs, embryos and eggs, would go to us. So you kind of pick from the different profiles that are available at different egg donor registries or donor egg registries. And, you know, I started looking myself through the registries, and I found that to be difficult. I think it was more of a, that I kind of felt that I was trying to find someone to replace me, which I guess I was doing technically, but that was a little hard for me. So I told my husband, I said, you know what, I would rather you look. We had decided on the five criteria that was most important to us because we had to narrow it down. Otherwise, you could go through the search to find that perfect egg donor, which I don't believe exists. And I know many women who get lost in couples who get lost in the shuffle and the search trying to find the perfect one. But we picked five criteria that was most important to us. There were a couple of donor registries that we were looking at, and he narrowed it down to three. And he brought those three to me, and out of the three, we picked the one that we both agreed on. And thankfully, she was available. So I had to kind of narrow the process down, because I admit my husband kind of got lost in the shuffle a bit and was looking at every donor egg registry in the nation and California. And I said, you know, I'm not going to another state. I want to keep it local. I want to make this as, you know, least complicated as possible. And I told him, I said, I'm not perfect. There's a lot of things about me that aren't perfect. I'm not looking for the perfect egg donor. So I think the most important things, top five things are the most important. As long as she fits those criteria, that's good enough for me. So that's kind of how we went through the process of finding an egg donor.
How long did that process take you?
I'm trying to think, maybe a couple of months, to pick her. Right. And then, once we did pick her and found out she was available, then it comes down to coordinating the schedule, you know, when she's available. And I'm pretty sure after we had picked her, she was going through the egg donation process within a month or two, maybe 2 months, I would think, because they had to put her, you know, they usually have to put them on birth control for a month. So, actually I changed it probably about 2 to 3 months before she actually went through the cycle to donate her eggs.
Got it. And then you guys ended up doing a embryo transfer?
Yeah. So for donor egg cycles, more likely they're going to be frozen because, you know, you stimulate the donor and to retrieve her eggs. And then the recipient, which would be me, you then give the medications to, you know, to get my lining ready. And there were a couple of times where my lining did not get ready. Did not get thick enough for transfer. So it took a little bit of time before my lining was actually appropriate enough to transfer the embryos, because you know, you want to get things as optimal as possible. So most of the donor egg cycles are going to be frozen embryos.
Got it. Yeah. So you did mention, that the first transfer failed for mm-hmm. you, and mm-hmm. and that was one of the most difficult parts.
obviously there's this big thing with, this is going to be the answer. This is everything that you've been waiting for. The statistics are with you. Nothing's against you. You know, we're told that it, with age, like it's still okay. Under 45, you can still carry and it's all good. You just need a younger egg, right?
Yeah.
So how did you deal with that disappointment of a failed transfer?
It was hard. I went through, we both did. It was hard for both of us. We probably went through a few months of probably a little bit of a depression, actually, and trying to figure out if we could go through it again, because the emotional toll that it takes, and of course there's a physical toll, no question, but the emotional toll that it takes can be sometimes more impactful than the physical toll that it takes. So we actually, it was actually yesterday was the day I got the call that the first embryo transfer from donor egg did not take. We took October, November, December off. We traveled to Peru. We went international, which was a wonderful trip. It kind of reset us. We got back and we had decided that we were going to try again with two more donor embryos. So, donor egg embryos, I'm sorry. And, I think the best thing we did was take a break, because it helped to get our minds right, get us emotionally in a better place. I did decide to do a couple of months of acupuncture in preparation, which I'd never done before. At that point, I was probably really willing to try anything. And as a busy physician, it was hard for me in the previous cycles to make acupuncture a part of my routine. But I did it this last time, and I don't know that acupuncture was the magic trick, because that transfer did take, but I do think it helped my stress level as an active, busy physician in a stressful job. I think it did help my stress level. So if anything, I think it contributed to decreasing my stress, which definitely can help improve the success rate of IVF in general.
Yeah. There's sometimes this conflict between Western and Eastern medicine. Did you feel like that may have contributed to you waiting and holding out to do acupuncture?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's great. Yeah. I love acupuncture as a part of the infertility journey. So I'm really glad that you got that done. And yes, if anything, it's just relieves the stress.
Yeah.
You went through a tough journey, a long journey. I think if I counted right, about 4 years that it took.
I'm trying to think. So I started the process in January or February of 2014. And I had, no, it wasn't that long. I had them, because I kind of went the IV cycles back to back to back to back. The longest part was the time between finishing the IVF for myself and then doing the donor egg. So we delivered them in September of 2016. So it was about 2.5 years, I would say.
Okay, yeah, you're like me. I barely took a break. It took me 14 months to get through 6 IVF cycles.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay, so in the meantime, you're still working in an industry where you're a physician and you are working with pregnant women every day. That seems to be a trigger for a lot of us in the infertility community. How did you yourself deal with that while you're having trouble? You're actually serving these patients.
Yeah. So, you know, there's two ways to look at it. I'm a maternal fetal medicine specialist. So number one, I'm delivering babies. And then I'm also going through loss with my patients. So, it wasn't always easy. I think, I had to try to compartmentalize a little bit, and there's nothing wrong with that, because you have to do what you have to do to get through your day. And because my job is what it is, as far as high risk pregnancies, and a lot of times outcomes are good and sometimes they're not, I refused to let what I was going through take the joy away, joy from what my job gave me, because I love my job. And infertility had already taken so much away from me. I didn't want it to take that away as well. No matter what the outcome was going to be, whether or not I was going to be able to be a mom and carry children myself. It wasn't always easy, but that's kind of how I had to keep reminding myself. I will say that, you know, the nursing staff, a lot of the nurses who knew what I was going through, they were great with me. But I will also say it wasn't as hard going through IVF and all the infertility being doing what I do, it wasn't as hard as after having premature twins at 31 weeks, being in the NICU for, 6 weeks, having been on bed rest for 2 months and almost losing them. The aftermath of that and coming back to work was actually more traumatic, because after going through, and being on bed rest from 21 weeks and 6 days until 30 weeks and worrying every day if you were going to lose them, especially those first several weeks. And then coming back and going through that with my patients, that kind of triggered a lot more for me than the actual infertility part. So that was actually more, like I said, triggering. And even to this day, it still can be. It's something I can't escape. I'm, to be honest with you, and I mentioned this to someone the other day, it's been 4 years or 4.5 years since, 4 years they were born, but when you add on the bed rest and everything. And I'm just now realizing that I probably do have some trauma from that time, and I'm addressing it now, by going through therapy. One thing I do recommend to any woman or couple or man or anybody that's going through fertility treatments and loss and failures, and then having a pregnancy after loss, I highly recommend going through therapy. That's the one thing I wish, looking back, that I had done. And I waited way too long to do it. I kind of underestimated the impact it could have, even 4 years later. So that would be a piece of advice I would give to anybody going through this, because you don't really realize how much trauma it can potentially occur, cause, especially if it does, your plan does not go as expected. I think many women, not just women over age 35 or having babies after or using IVF after age 40, they feel that if they can't get pregnant on their own, that IVF is the magical cure. And it's not. IVF does not work for everyone. It did not work for me. I failed IVF. Okay. So we don't talk about that enough. I'm not trying to be a Debbie Downer here, if you will, but I think women need to be realistic and they need to take care of themselves. And couples, I keep saying women, but couples go through it and individuals go through it as well. We have to take care of our mental and emotional health. And I do think therapy is essential for anyone going through this, especially if you go through a long process, because it doesn't, having the babies or bringing a baby home after this long journey does not fix all the stuff that you went through to get there.
Yeah, I definitely second that. And I think that it's important to also find somebody who specializes in fertility and in loss.
Yeah.
I know that while I was going through treatments, somewhere between my third and fifth cycle, I was seeing a therapist, but it wasn't very hopeful. And I only started seeing an infertility specialist after I got pregnant, because I knew that there were all of these things that I still had to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to deal with them before the baby got here.
Right.
But it's an ongoing journey. I mean, he's going to be here any week, and I'm going to still need to go through that, because you're right. Like, none of those things go away. And I think the word, you use the word failure, which a lot of us hate. And for a lot of us, especially us that are type A personalities who have gone and are really great with our careers, and all of these things have gone really well as long as we worked hard.
Yes.
Like, we can't work hard enough for this to work.
Right.
And so this won't be the first time that you're dealing with failure in your life.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's exactly. And I think that was a hard thing for me to accept. The other thing I hear a lot is that, especially as women get older and approach age 38 and 40 and even older, well, I'm healthy, I have no pre-existing medical conditions, I have, I'm fine. But age still has an impact on the success of IVF. So we have to be realistic, and we have to understand the statistics, and we have to look at what our best options are for achieving our goals. And, I learned all of this along the way. So anytime I get a chance to advise people that may follow, after me, that's what I try to do. Just be realistic, understand that even if you're in the best health, there could be other limitations that you don't know about. So having a fertility specialist that's going to advise you on all that is crucial.
Yeah. So because you're a physician, it almost seems like you fast-tracked through the TTC stage, like the trying to conceive naturally, and you knew what your the numbers were, and you went straight to an RE. A lot of the women listening are maybe if they're in the medicated stage or the IUI stage, and they haven't gotten necessarily to IVF, what are some of the questions that they should be asking their OBGYNs? While they're still in that phase where they know they may have something like PCOS or endometriosis that's keeping them from getting pregnant, but they're still haven't tried for 12 months or they haven't gone through all the steps that can get them to IVF faster. What should they be asking?
So this is what I'm going to say, and it may not be very popular, but I'm going to say it. And it's being a physician and also having talked to hundreds of women who have been through this. A general OBGYN can do certain levels of the infertility workup. They can do certain levels of infertility treatment. But the whole, let's talk about IUI. I firmly believe, and I'm seconded by many REIs, that after three rounds of IUI, if you're not successful, you should be seeing a fertility specialist. It should also depend on your age. Depending on your age, it depends on how, and you're having regular menstrual cycles. It depends on how long you're going to give yourself to try to conceive spontaneously before seeing an REI. Your health, having other pre-existing medical conditions. If you have PCOS, if you have endometriosis, and you're not able to get pregnant, seeing an REI sooner than later is essential. I also want to say this. Going to an REI does not mean they're going to fast track you to IVF. That is a common misconception. I hear all the time, oh, REIs just want to do IVF. I don't think that's true. And that's not what my experience has been. What they want to do is figure out exactly what's going on with you and the best treatment. And also while talking to you on what your timeline is, how much time do you feel like you have? Because then that will also guide what treatments they will recommend. So although general OBGYNs are great for some things, they are not fertility specialists. They do not do infertility treatments and infertility workups day in and day out. They also deliver babies. They do gynecology. They do gynecologic surgeries. This is not their area of expertise. So if you're reaching the 3 to 6 month mark and you're under age 35, you should see a fertility specialist to get that second opinion. If you're over age 37 to 38, I would give it 3 months. If you're over age 40, I would see an REI straight out. Okay. So yes, I know it can be expensive, but I've heard many, many stories of women depleting whatever funds they did have on multiple cycles of IUI and other things with their general OBGYN, and then they didn't have anything left when they finally decided to go see an REI. So sometimes it might be better to see an REI right off the bat, but that's a decision you have to make. Just be aware that fertility specialists do this day in and day out. This is all they do. And I'm not discounting what general OBGYNs can do at all, but that's not what they do every day. So just make sure you get that second opinion sooner than later would be my advice.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's really important for the older ladies is that we don't really know until they try to fertilize the egg, until you get that, until you get the genetic testing. We don't know if our eggs are good or not until they're out of our body and in a lab.
Yeah,
I know that for me, I was preserving my fertility. And that's when I learned that, oh, wait, you might be 35 and you're on the cusp, but no, you don't have time to waste here. You need to go straight into IVF if you want to be a mother. So there's, until that egg is out of your body, you don't know. And that's why you need to go with the REI, because those IUIs may be in vain because, again, your egg quality is just not there.
Yeah. So, you talk about the egg quality, which you just mentioned, is whether the genetics of the egg and the quality of the egg are optimal, which as you age, the eggs age with you, and the number of eggs that you have available to fertilize. So those are the two aspects of a woman's fertility that do decline with age, and it's different for every woman. I will never say that it is impossible for any woman over age 40 or even later to conceive spontaneously. It happens. I see it all the time. I deliver women that conceive spontaneously, but there are many women who don't, and there are many women who are conceiving after age 40 who are using assisted reproductive technology and may not be exactly transparent about it, but that's their choice. So you have to decide for yourself You can't look at what's happening on social media. You can't look at what's happening with celebrities and what happened with them to dictate what you're going to do. You have to look at your situation, speak to the experts to determine what's the best course of action for you. Okay. Don't get a false sense of security because someone on social media had a baby at 45 and they may have used treatments and didn't say anything. Myself, once I decided to go public and start my website, Babies After 35, I was completely transparent because I knew if I was an OBGYN at age 40 and was still shocked about my inability to become pregnant on my own or with IVF because of my age, even though I was healthy, had no medical conditions, I was a good weight, then what are a lot of other women thinking? So I wanted to get the education out there now, and not everybody's transparent and they don't have to be. But you still, as an individual, especially as you get older, you need to see if there's any other thing to consider in your process to becoming pregnant.
Yes, totally. So a lot of the time, we're so focused on the treatment, we're not sure exactly how to deal with an actual pregnancy. I know for me, it was really challenging to accept that I succeeded after being so conditioned for loss.
Yeah.
As a both an infertile and an MFM, what advice would you give women dealing with that challenge?
With actually becoming pregnant?
Yeah, like that anxiety that you start feeling, yeah. And or like the disbelief. I think it took me 8 months to believe that I was pregnant.
Yeah, so what I think is this, and I experienced this myself, becoming pregnant after multiple failures, but also having twins and also being a high risk and doing what I do. I'll speak personally because I, you know, ended up going on hospital bed rest at 21 weeks, 6 days. I was so scared of losing them that I completely disconnected from my pregnancy and I did not bond with them. I probably didn't start actually bonding with my pregnancy and my twins until I was well after 28 weeks. I ended up delivering them at 31 weeks. And I look back and I feel a bit guilty because I can't get that time back. And I didn't really get to enjoy my pregnancy, but I also, I'm not too hard on myself because it was pretty traumatic and I was scared. So feeling that way, feeling anxious, the fear of loss in a pregnancy after a loss or a pregnancy after a long infertility journey is completely normal. It's okay to have those feelings. But what I do recommend is that you get therapy so that you can talk through this, so that you can bond with your pregnancy and find ways to help get over that. It's not going to make it all go away. Okay. And I wish I had done it because I get, like I said earlier, going through this and having gone through therapy would have been so much better for me. And it wouldn't be 4 years later that I'm just now finally doing it and understanding the impact that all that had on me. So get the therapy because, like I said before as well, finally getting pregnant does not make all that anxiety, all of that sadness, all of that fear just magically go away. Everybody thinks, oh, well, you're pregnant now. You should be happy. You got your babies and you're going to have babies and you know, everything should be beautiful and happy. That's not always the case. A lot of time there's a cloud hanging over us, fear of doom, fear of that this pregnancy is not going to end. And sometimes even the babies get here and you still worry that something's going to happen to them when they're babies. All of that is completely normal, and we know that. It's just not talked about as much because society kind of makes us feel like we should be happy that we finally got what we were trying so hard to get. I want women to know that it's completely normal to have those feelings, but it's also essential and crucial that you take care of your emotional and mental well-being so that you can be present for your babies when you're pregnant, so that you can be present for your babies when they're little, and not be consumed by all of that anxiety and fear of losing them. In whatever capacity that loss is in your mind when it comes to them. So I hear that all the time. I know that it happens, and I want women to know that feeling that way is normal, but there is help, and you can get help to work through those feelings.
Yes, no, it's totally normal. Mm-hmm. So for you deal with a lot with the high risk pregnancies, is age alone a cause for your pregnancy to be considered high risk?
So that's debatable. So let's talk a little bit about the history. Why did age 35 become the magic age at which a woman was considered advanced maternal age? And let's just get this out there, the whole advanced maternal age label, geriatric pregnancy, elderly, prima gravida, elderly, it's not attractive or sexy at all. I hate that terminology. It's medical terminology. They're actual ICD-10 codes. And until we can figure out a better way to say it, that it is what it is, okay? But no, a 35-year-old or even a 40-year-old is not geriatric or elderly, okay? But the reason why at age 35 was considered to be high risk, because that was the age at which the risk of having a baby with Down syndrome was roughly equal to the risk of having a complication from an amniocentesis, which is the way to definitively diagnose whether or not the chromosomes of the baby you're carrying are normal while you're still pregnant. That's the invasive procedure that's being utilized. So that's how traditionally age 35 became known to be a high risk. We also know that just in general, women as they age, particularly after age 38, then definitely after age 40, the risk of genetic abnormalities in pregnancy increase. We also know that both egg quality and egg quantity decrease, which increases a risk after age 35. Then there's another nosedive at around, I'm not going to say nosedive, another decrease at around 37 to 38, and then a definite decrease and drop in egg quality and quantity after age 40. So that increases a woman's risk of pregnancy loss. Okay. We also know that based on age alone, women are increased risk for certain pregnancy complications. So that would be having a cesarean section, an increased risk for preterm labor and delivery, high blood pressure, placental abnormalities, gestational diabetes. That's based on age alone. No matter how healthy you are after age 35 or after age 40 and you're pregnant, you're still an increased risk for those things. So looking at overall, should age 35 still be considered a advanced maternal age, for lack of better terminology? Until we look a little bit deeper into things, I would say yes, as a maternal fetal medicine specialist, because of all the things I just mentioned. But that does not mean a woman is going to have an unhealthy or unsuccessful pregnancy. The first hurdle we have to get over as we delay or advance in age is, number one, getting pregnant. Then number two, making sure or trying to the best of our abilities while we're pregnant that the chromosomes of the pregnancy are normal. That's with antenatal screening, and there's multiple forms to do that, and then having the detailed anatomy scan, okay? Then once that's clear and we are the only way to be certain is with the amniocentesis, okay, at this point in time. But as long as we are fairly certain that the chromosomes of the pregnancy are normal, then the next hurdle we have to get through is an uncomplicated pregnancy, keeping in mind that there are certain things that a woman's at an increased risk for with advancing age, especially if she has pre-existing medical conditions, okay, that can further impact and complicate a pregnancy of advancing maternal age. So, you know, that's why, you know, age alone is a risk factor as you age. But once we get all those things cleared out, you know, getting pregnant, the baby looks good on ultrasound, the antenatal serum screening or whatever screening we did is normal. As long as the woman is otherwise healthy, has no uncontrolled pre-existing medical conditions, she can be monitored just as any other pregnancy. But keeping in mind that she is at increased risk for certain things. So whoever's taking care of her should just have that in mind as they're managing her pregnancy.
Yeah, I can tell you I'm in a high-risk pregnancy, but it has nothing to do with the actual baby. He's totally 100% fine. It's all me.
Yeah.
I'm the problem, and, you know, but everything seems to be going fine so far. But, yeah, there's two factors here. There's the baby and their health, and then there's the mother and her health, for sure. Does doing IVF make you high-risk pregnancy? Because, you know, we've heard of the heart conditions being associated with IVF. Is there truth to that?
Well, so, you know, the data is kind of conflicting. It's not, has not, there a true association between IVF and certain abnormalities in the baby has not been borne out in the research just yet. We're starting to see some data about it. I do think a lot of physicians will request, obviously, the antenatal screening for a pregnancy conceived via IVF. And then also a detailed anatomy scan to look more closely at the baby's anatomy. But as far as, you know, IVF specifically causing other medical complications, again, that's not necessarily been proven either. What we do know is that twin IVF pregnancies probably do have a slightly more increased risk than a spontaneously conceived twin pregnancy. And I, for one, was one of those. So that's because of the twins having more adverse outcomes, twin pregnancies, both in women who spontaneously conceive and also women who do IVF. That's why in the United States, the single embryo transfer is recommended and is largely done. The reason why I had two embryos transferred was because I had already had failed embryo transfers, and because I was 42 years old. So that's why the two embryos were transferred. But there's only certain times in which most RAI docs here in the States will transfer two embryos. Single embryo transfer is recommended by ASRM, which is the governing body for reproductive endocrinology and infertility. Just while we're on the twins topic, you know, I hear all the time that women are, you know, I would love to have twins. You know, I want to get the more than one embryo transferred. I just caution women, and I firmly stand behind the single embryo transfer, because I almost lost my twins. And although I'm thankful, you know, and I brought them home, I still think about that and the risk that was there. And as a result, I do firmly stand behind the single embryo transfer recommendation by the REIs here in the States.
Yes. Yeah. I also had multiple embryos transfers in one take. Mm-hmm. Only one took for me, but mine were not genetically tested. So I think there's, and I was 37, more than 37 and a half. So there's definitely a age factor there, and whether you've tested genetically, and I do agree the twin pregnancies are much higher risk, especially if you're already with the age as well. So you've opened up, you have the getting pregnant over 35 website. Tell us a little bit more about the resources that people can find there and what you provide.
So on my website, babiesafter35.com, I have kind of broken down into fertility, pregnancy, motherhood, and then life after 40. I accept blogs and have blogs from medical professionals. I also have blogs from women who have been through certain aspects of fertility, pregnancy, motherhood, and life after 40. After age 35. So it's kind of covers everything, a more personal perspective from women who have been through it. And then also a medical perspective from physicians who can write about different medical topics. So that's what the website is for. I also have an Instagram account, Babies After 35, where I share a lot there as well. So, you know, the whole goal when I first started the website was to give more information to women who are delaying childbearing and are going through fertility treatments or pregnant or new moms after age 35. But oddly enough, over the past year or so, the largest demographic of women I have who are on Babies After 35 are aged 25 to 34. And I think that's because women are taking more control of their fertility and being more proactive about the potential of delaying childbearing and wanting to get education because they are anticipating delaying childbearing until later in life. So that's why they're coming to the website just to get more information. So, which I think is great. I didn't think that would happen, but it is. And I think it's wonderful that women are at least trying to educate themselves at a younger age. So we kind of cover it all. And I'm even going more into, you know, educating women who are younger, because the Babies After 35 is no longer just for women after 35. We clearly have a larger age group of women who are following us. So,
yes, no, I totally think that there's a lot of women out there who are just waiting for that right moment, waiting to meet that partner, and so they're considering even just egg preservation, at a younger age, so they can wait for that. And that's a whole other topic of conversation about success rates with egg preservation and how many cycles you need to do to really give yourself a chance after 35. But it's definitely a topic that needs to be discussed. I wish that was something that I did back before 35.
When I think of, I'm trying to think of when the egg freezing, where they do the vitrification process, where it helped to increase the success rate of freezing eggs without damaging the eggs because it's much easier to freeze an embryo than an egg. But I looked back about if I had considered freezing my eggs. Actually, it was back during the time, because I'm 47 now. Actually, I'm 47 today. Today's my birthday. So thank you. So the time where I should have frozen my eggs was probably a time where the success rate of freezing eggs was not as great as it is now. But now it's great. So while we're on the topic, the best time to freeze eggs is up to age 32. Because that's when you can get the biggest yield for one cycle of freezing, where you can potentially get as many eggs as possible. Women can freeze their eggs after age 32. But I do think, you know, especially after age 35 and approaching age 40 before freezing your eggs, you should talk to their fertility specialist and be aware of what the limitations might be, how many eggs you're likely to get, that you may need to do more than one cycle of freezing to get enough eggs in the bank. And I ask physicians or fertility specialists all the time, what's the ideal number? And I think there is no magic number, but I think that most fertility specialists are happy if you have 20 to 25 eggs to freeze. And regardless, you know, and some women get that in one cycle and some women have to do more than that. But ideally that's the number of eggs they would like to have to freeze.
Yeah, just sometimes you don't really know from testing prior and looking at your AFC and all of those things. For me, I have endometriosis. I had an endometrioma. My left ovary at every baseline scan still shows follicles, but stimulation makes them disappear, not grow. And so I'm left with the one ovary. And we only learned that because I attempted to freeze my eggs. So there's a lot of things that are there where you don't really know what, like everything else, labs, everything else was completely fine. And so you don't really know until you start trying.
Yeah, I think anytime a woman is going through the either egg freezing process or IVF process, to be prepared that it might take more than one time. There's many women who only need one, and that's great, but there's many of us who don't. And sometimes that can be quite alarming and it could be quite shocking when it does take more than one cycle. So just be prepared and, you know, take care of your mental and emotional health through the process. Definitely would recommend seeing a therapist through this process. I can't say that enough, because it can be a very physically, emotionally, mentally, financially draining process for some women and couples. So trying to get yourself in the best mindset at the very outset is ideal.
Yes. No. So thank you for all the information that you shared today. It's so, so helpful and being so open and honest about your own journey. We really appreciate it and loved having you on.
Thank you so much.